This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
As we bring in our insider, our King's insider from the insiders, our man James Hamm here with us, not taking the trip to San Francisco today so he can spend some time with us here as we get ready for the second game of the Sacramento Kings preseason. And stunningly, it is again against the Golden State Warriors. Hammer, let's start with Wednesday's game. Haven't gotten a chance to talk to you about that one yet. Obviously, two very different games from the first half to the second half, but we saw a pretty electric offense there in the first half that's very different than the electric offense that we saw a couple of years prior.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? They barely shot any three-pointers. They didn't run any play sets. All they ran was their flow offense. And I thought that that was interesting because they just wanted to read and react and see how the players moved on the floor and to see how they sort of mesh together without play sets. And man, I thought it was impressive. There were a couple of wrinkles that we had not seen before. A couple that stood out. Number one is watching Domantas Sabonis pull up on the fast break from the free throw line and nail a jump shot. Didn't hesitate at all. He hit a couple other jumpers I thought were very impressive. Didn't shoot any 3-point shots, but, then we had the sort of the plays off of Domas that we have not seen before. I thought the two plays to Keegan Murray where the Warriors tried to switch smaller players onto Keegan and Keegan went right down the middle of the key and Domas threw it up and over the top and he kept laying it right over the top of his man. I thought that was super impressive. Just overall, I thought it was a really fun brand of basketball outside of the fact that they really struggled to play defense at all.
Yeah, that was the one part about that game on Wednesday that left us from planning the parade. It's like, damn, they're just going to keep giving up three-pointers like that, huh? How do you kind of perceive that whole situation with, you know, the Warriors hitting threes, Kings giving them up, and just in that game, maybe it's not a big deal, but like Dame has talked about, like that's something that they've had to deal with since last year. Like, does it still look like a problem to you, or is that maybe a one-off for right now?
I think it's a bit of a one-off. I mean, look, like we talked about this. I talked about this with Kyle earlier on the Insiders. Like, the Warriors have had some of the greatest offenses we've ever seen, and realistically the best shooting tandem that the NBA has ever seen, ever. Like, they have the best shooter of all time on their roster right now. So the fact that their franchise record was 27 made three-pointers in a game and they busted the Kings up for 28 in a preseason game, I mean, that's just wild to consider that they hit that many threes. And it wasn't just one guy. It was, you know, Buddy Hield hit some threes, Steph hit some threes, but then every rando on their roster hit a three. So whether it's Draymond or Kuminga, or you get to the bottom of the barrel when they're, you know, running their young guys out there, everyone was hitting a three. So every once in a while, it's going to be like that. And I would say, like, one of the advantages the Warriors had in that game is the Kings had not played a preseason game, and the Warriors had. And preseason is so much different than training camp. So you have this little bit of flow that you get going. And saying all of that, I think the Warriors had hit 15 threes in the first half, and the Kings led 68-66 going to the half. So despite the fact that the Kings were outscored, I think, by 60 from the three-point line, and were still in it most of the game, you know, it was just sort of an anomaly night. And I don't think we'll see another night like that from the Warriors. I mean, they might hit 22, they might hit 20, but hitting 28 is something different.
What do you think the balance is for the Kings, though? Not necessarily in the amount that they make, but the amount that they take. We got used to them taking a lot of threes last year, and we realize now this is you added an offensive component to this team that isn't a high volume 3-point shooter. And there have been questions about how this team could, you know, capitalize on an offense that was so electric behind the 3-point line a couple of years ago to being an offense that's potentially electric in front of the 3-point line this year. And I think we saw a lot of that in the first half of that first game against the Golden State Warriors. But do you think that's a trend of what we see, or does this team wind up striking a balance where we're going to see that three get back up there as the games progress?
Yeah, I think we're going to see the three get back up there. I don't know that they'll shoot. What did they shoot last year? Like 39 threes a game. I don't know that it's going to be that extreme. Because, like, look, you have two, not just one of the best mid-range jump shooters, but two of the best mid-range jump shooters in the game. Because De'Aaron Fox is spectacular in the mid-range. He just stopped taking them last year. So if you're going to have your players kind of live in that area, it's okay. But what you can't do is give up 28 threes. You know, you can't fall behind by 1 point every single time down the court because you're making twos and they're making threes. Now, I don't think that's going to be the problem. I think that this team will shoot, you know, 34, 35 threes a game back to where they were sort of the year before that. But I still think that there will be like quite a few threes. And it's something Mike pointed out during his post game. Like, they scored 68 in the first half with sort of their rotational players, right? Mm-hmm. And they did that without Kevin Huerter and without Trey Lyles, who are two excellent offensive players for their position. So even though Trey only averages, you know, 7-8 points per game, he's still an excellent offensive player. He always has been. It's why he's in the league, for his offense, not for his defense. And to not have those two pieces and still be able to throw up 68 with no problem, this team is going to score. And 68 without running a single play set, I mean, that's just really, really impressive. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what they look like, not just like in the first month of the season, but, you know, December. I want to see how this thing like slowly meshes together, mm-hmm. and how they keep adding new wrinkles to the offense, because I think there's going to be a lot of that this season.
You know me, James, I'm hyped for the offense. What I saw on Wednesday, that got me hyped because it looks so natural, right? Like, it didn't look like anything that was forced or, oh man, they've been, but it was like, it didn't almost even look like something they had been working on. They look like guys who understand how to play basketball, just letting it happen. Like, oh, Sabonis got a switch here. Hey, get out the way. He's about to post up or whatever the case may be. Oh, he got it on the block. Cut through. That's going to get this guy here, and Sabonis is going to have a shot to – like, it's just natural. Like you mentioned, they didn't run any plays. They had sets or whatever, but it just looks so natural. And it was – for them to look that smooth that early in this process, it's something that I think we should all be excited about.
Yeah, I think even, you know, watching Jalen McDaniels with the starters, he got like three or four wide open looks underneath the basket on back cuts and on just like different plays that they were running. Totally different than anything that we saw from Keegan Murray, as far as like where he was coming from and the play set and everything else. But I think it just shows you the wrinkles that there are to this offense. And, you know, I don't believe that DeMar DeRozan is going to shoot like 100% from the field for the season.
Wow.
Well, But watching him and just seeing what he does, how he'll shoot a shot, that his shots that he takes and he makes, they're those ones that just like are demoralizing. Hmm. You know what I mean? They're the shots that, like, it doesn't matter how good your defense is on him, he still like stops and pops and hits a rainbow jumper right in your face. And it doesn't matter if it's a like a 6 footer who's guarding him or like a 7 foot 1 guy. He just has an ability to know exactly where he is on the court and where the rim is. And so those are really interesting shots. And then, like, look, I think De'Aaron Fox, like, this isn't, I'm not saying anything negative about what I saw from him. I thought he was coasting. He was just kind of like, okay, I know where first gear is. I know where second gear is. I know where third gear is, but I'm not going to hit fourth, fifth, sixth, whatever. I'm not going to hit that right now tonight. There's no reason for me to do that. We're just kind of hanging out and having a good time and figuring out the flow of the offense, right? There will come a point where De'Aaron Fox can, you know, will just like hit the gas. And it shouldn't be in preseason because that's a good way to get hurt, especially if you're playing against sort of the lesser players who come in late in games. But I would expect to see like all of this function better and better and better as we move towards the start of the season. And then again, I think it could take a month. It could take a while for this thing to like be fully functional. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we're going to see a lot of interesting basketball and a lot of, I want to say, like organic, like flow basketball, which is good.
You think it's going to be difficult to integrate those guys who aren't really a part of things right now? You know, you mentioned Trey, Kevin Herter, those guys, Jordan McLaughlin, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little difficult. And it's not because like they don't know where to go, because they do, because they've been with this team forever. But I think it's going to be different because they don't know where to go with DeMar on the court, and they don't know how to play like in a two-man game with DeMar. And I think you can get around a lot of that by just not having them on the court all that much with DeMar early on in the season. But eventually I think that they'll all figure each other out. It's just he's a very unique player. And, you know, if you're tweaking your offense where all of a sudden you're not just doing this pace and space, you're doing a lot of different things that are inside the arc. Filling new guys into that offense is probably not going to be just super simple. I do think that like the second team, especially if Keon Ellis holds on to that starting job with Trey and Malik and Kevin Herter, it's going to be super dynamic. And then you'll slowly integrate those guys with minutes from DeMar, and eventually they'll all figure it out.
We haven't really talked too much about this guy since the game, but did you like what you saw from Keegan Murray? You know, it wasn't like crazy, but I thought he was pretty efficient. You know, he did a lot of stuff off the ball, a couple things off the bounce. What did you think about his performance?
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, again, I want to see more. And I think it's interesting to like just to like look at the grand scheme of things. I don't have the box score in front of me, but I believe De'Aaron Fox took 10 shots. Mm-hmm. I think DeMar DeRozan took 6. Malik Monk took 7. Yeah. Right around 7 or 8 for Domas, and right around 6 or 7 for Keegan. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be like, if you just double those up, it's going to be a little bit like that. Maybe DeMar DeRozan is more like a 14, 15 shot per game guy. So, but again, that's not that far off. You know, one more shot in the first half, and he only played 15 minutes. So it's easy to see where he could have got an extra shot. So like, look, I don't think Keegan Murray is going to be a primary early in the season. There are going to be games where Keegan Murray is a primary shooter and a primary offensive weapon. But I think that because you have all of these other pieces that are so high end on the offensive end, we're going to see a lot more of what we saw from him on the defensive end, where I thought he was so stellar, even though like the one play that everyone remembers where eventually Steph Curry got like an open look but to watch Keegan play the defensive style that they're asking for and to play defense with his chest, which is something that Luke Laux and Mike Brown have both talked to us about, how, you know, the league doesn't call. If you move in front of a guy and hit them with your chest, as long as your hands are up, the league doesn't call that foul. and we watched it in full functionality with that defense, that sequence he had against Steph. And so I think Keegan's going to be a really important piece. I just think he's going to be a really important piece. It does a lot of work off the ball, and maybe a catch and shoot guy who has a couple of opportunities like what we saw with the Domas cut to the basket, where he, you know, he's moving, and where opposing teams, you know, they've got to defend De'Aaron, they've got to defend DeMar, they've got to defend Sabonis. Mm-hmm. And so he might find himself on smaller players quite often, and he's got to show that he can abuse them in that situation.
You think guy, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. Like, you think guys can eat on different nights? Like, we have like DeMar games, Domas games, De'Aaron games. I mean, there's got to be like some overlap. We did see, you know, when Kenny was doing the top 25 games of the Kings season, we did stumble across some games where like Domas had, you know, 25 and De'Aaron had 30 and Malik had 30. And it was like, yeah, everyone else had 8. Like, normally there's a little bit more of a balance, and there's certainly some overlap, but with the pace that they played with the other night, like, is this just something where Keegan's got the hot hand tonight? He's going to be the one. De'Aaron's he's in that mode. He's going to be the one. Is it really as kind of simple as that with these guys?
I think it is. I mean, where I would kind of point to is look at the San Francisco 49ers. Look at how Debo had, 100 yards receiving
right.
last night.
Yeah.
But the game before, it was Ayuk with, 130 or 140, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. The week before that, it was Juwan Jennings 2 weeks in a row. And then you had the Debo game early and the Kittle game early. And, I think it's going to be a little bit like that, where, teams are going to try to shut the faucet off and make somebody else beat them. But there's too many players on this team that can score. So I don't know that you can, there will be games, sure, where guys like Sabonis get 6 shots, right? We've seen it in the past, and that just happens. But there are also games where, man, I think this team could have 5 guys score 20, you know, without any problem. I think there'll be games where one guy will go for 40, one guy will go for 30, and then you'll have a couple of guys right around 20. Like, this team is just really dynamic. And I had someone tell me years ago, even when the Kings had, they weren't great, but they did have DeMarcus Cousins. They had Marcus Thornton and Isaiah Thomas and Rudy Gay. And another coach said, look, this team on paper, they might not be, you know, they're not like a winning basketball team all the time, you know, but look at how many guys they have that can score. And that means that any single night, someone new can bust us for 30. And that's really, really difficult. And now the Kings have 6 of them, or at least, you know, 5 of them, I would say, they can hit you for 30 at any time, and another, you know, 2 guys that can go for 20 at any moment. Yeah. So I think it's going to be interesting. I do hope that Keon Ellis is able to put his stamp on a game a little bit more than he did. But I also don't think that there are going to be too many games this season where Jalen McDaniels takes 7 shots. So, there are shots to be had here.
Yeah. What did you think about Keon in his game? Just his fit with those guys. You've said it a number of different times. It feels like it was the perfect fit. Because we talked about all the shot attempts that, you know, had to be spread around. There was one guy who didn't necessarily need any of the shot attempts to be out there and be productive, and that's Keon. And it kind of played out in that first half that way.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to find a way to be a little bit more of something. You know, I know it was him who had the really nice, complicated pass to Sabonis for one of his jump shots. And so you're seeing a little bit more. I'd also say, after the game, Mike Brown talked about how Isaac Jones and Keon Ellis both had, I think it was 4 or 5 opportunities to crash the offensive glass, and they crashed on every single one of the opportunities. And that's something the team is looking for. So again, it's about listening to what the coaches are asking and following simple directions and actually going through with what they're trying to, you know, put forth. But the problem the Kings had is that the Warriors just didn't miss any shots. So there weren't that many opportunities. And so I would expect that Keon will be more of a part of the offense. But if he averaged 6 points a game this season as a starter, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, it's just kind of the nature of the beast here. This is a team that you have that that is built with all kinds of offensive weapons, and just look at a Danny Green or look at, you know, a Matisse Thybulle or PJ Tucker and their career arc and just how they have so much impact on a game without having to score. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. As long as when he is asked to shoot the three ball, he can hit it. And he doesn't go into any prolonged slump. I think he's going to get an opportunity to show that he belongs at that spot.
You wouldn't be shocked, and it probably wouldn't matter, right? Like if the offense is doing, if he averages, I think you said 6 points per game. If the offense is doing what we expect it to be doing, Keon averaging 6 points per game is not a big deal.
It's not a big deal at all, especially if you consider that Malik Monk can come off the bench and average 15, and you might get another 10 out of Kevin Huerter, another 7 or 8 out of Trey Lyles. All of a sudden you start adding up the numbers, and, you know, 20 from Sabonis, 20 from DeMar DeRozan, 17, 18 from Keegan Murray, 25 plus from Fox. Like, you don't need Keon Ellis to score at all, just like you don't need Alex Len to score. Mm-hmm. And you don't need Jalen McDaniels to score. The one thing I would point out is that if Jalen's going to be part of the rotation, you can almost see him as when Keon comes out, Jalen goes in. So you have one of those guys on the court who's long, athletic, playing defense the whole time, but not particularly a good scorer. We might see that type of play. You know, again, like if Jalen McDaniels like settles in and starts playing, he might be perfectly fine. I mean, he's a player who's averaged double figures in the league before. He's also a player who, you know, I think for a career, like 7-8 points per game, not around 6 point per game guy. So I think he can provide a little bit more. But I also just like when I'm watching Jalen run up and down the court, I just keep seeing Mo Harkless. Like he looks identical to Mo Harkless on the court, and just like, same game, same everything. You're like, okay, this is interesting.
So the thing about Jalen, we talked about it on Wednesday. I was kind of interested to see him, and yeah, he didn't make any shots, but that's fine. It was one game. Like Damian pointed out, like that might not even be what Mike is looking at, right? Like he got 7 shots on Wednesday because everything that went down, he might not get 7 shots in a week in a regular rotation. But Is there room for him to be in the rotation when everybody's healthy? I know you talked about Alex Len maybe situational, and Trey Lyles may play some backup 5 minutes depending on the team that they're playing. But if everybody's healthy, you got Trey, you got Malik, you got Huerter, you got Jordan. That's 9. If Alex Len plays that day, that's 10. I don't know if Mike routinely is going to go past a 9-man rotation. What you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because I also kind of feel like Jordan and Jalen might be like, you can't play both of them in games like all the time. And it might be the same with Alex, like between the three of them, like one of them might play like 15 to 18 minutes and the others might not play at all, or might play like 6 minutes here, 6 minutes there type deal. But it's just kind of the nature of the beast. Like, I don't know what his exact role will be. But what I do know is like, as we get deeper in the preseason, I want to see more and more of what he looks like with the starters. Because when you put him in the second half with a bunch of young guys, and he's a veteran, so everyone in the building is like, okay, well, at least you at least have one veteran out there in Jalen McDaniels and one veteran in Alex Len. But that's not who McDaniels will be with this team. And it's kind of like when you put Kessler Edwards at Summer League and you expect him to be a scorer, and everyone's like, why isn't Kessler Edwards just scoring a bunch? It's like, well, because that's not who he is as a player. So we need to at least let Jalen, you know, kind of fit in where he should naturally fit in, and not like a square peg in a round hole as like a non-scoring veteran who is being asked to score because you're playing with a bunch of young players in the second half of preseason games. So again, I'd say the same thing with Terry Taylor. Like I know a lot of people have beaten up on Terry Taylor after game one, and like everyone should back up a little bit. Like Terry Taylor is a guy who does all the dirty work. But when you're doing all the dirty work and half the guys around you are just dirty work guys or guys who have never played in a preseason game ever in their lives and at the NBA level, you know, it's really tough for you to be who you are when you're not surrounded by like the high end players that you normally are in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of want to see what he looks like playing more minutes with the starting group and seeing if he can get some of those, like the Jalen McDaniel minutes, and see if he looks like he can hang and defend three positions and go get offensive rebounds and things like that, playing in the main rotation. Because again, asking him to go out there and be like a 20 point per game guy in the second half, you know, when you're running a bunch of young players out there, that's just not who he is.
James, we heard Mike talk going into Wednesday's game about like read and react and no plays called, and they were going to approach this offense a specific type of way. What's the value in that for the players, and what's the value for that for Mike as the coach?
I think what you're doing is you're letting the players build trust with each other, because when you're in a bunch of sets, that means that number one, you're playing a slower pace. Mike's slowing it down and he's calling a play and you're processing a play. When you're playing at breakneck speed and with pace and in like a back and forth game, he wants them to be able to read and react the entire time. There is no time to call play sets. Play sets are for plays where somebody scores or there's a timeout or somebody gets fouled on one end and you inbound the ball and you're walking the ball up. That's when you call plays. And I think what he wants is for this team to just really, really kind of like feel each other on the court. Like, who are we going to be? How, like, where do you like your passes? What does your body motion look like when I'm playing against other teams? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's one thing for somebody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Come off a DHO and you're kind of getting a flow for how they like you to set a screen. Because, you know, every player likes a screen a different way, right? And Sabonis will have to learn what DeRozan wants. But when you're playing in this style and you're not putting up a bunch of play sets to slow the game down, Like, let's just react to each other as players. Let me figure out what you look like when you cut to the basket. And let me see what it looks like when you think, I think you're going to go to the basket, but then you cut back around and I've got to read your body language. I've got to figure out who you are and what you're trying to do on the court. And it's a little bit like a wide receiver and a quarterback, right? And we see how that connection can be lost so quickly and then regained so quickly. But if you don't have a good connection between a quarterback and a wide receiver, you can go run a specific route, but the second you go to make a move, if they don't have a good read on you, they might think that you're breaking hard to the inside when realistically you're giving a little shake and then going deep. And now they're throwing a ball over the middle that gets intercepted. It's the same thing with basketball. You know, you just want to be on the court with guys and sort of get like a feel for like who they are as players. And you get a little bit of that on preseason and training camp. In training camp, but it's not a bunch of 5-on-5, and it's a bunch of play sets. It's a bunch of drills early in the day and then some 5-on-5 late at night. And you're also playing against a bunch of guys who are running your defense, know exactly what's coming every single play. And they're not reading and reacting. They're, you know, a lot of times it's like hero ball. And so I kind of like what Mike's doing here, where he's just kind of rolling the ball out there and saying, let's see what you guys got.
James Hamm of the Insiders. We'll come back. We talked a lot about Wednesday's game. Let's talk about what tonight might look like at the dental office in San Francisco. We'll come back with James Hamm of the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Air commercial freeze for that James Hamm. He was just trying to answer a question about Tom Petty or the Eagles, and he froze.
Just froze.
The answer right is there. Both. The answer is both. Like, come on now.
Well, obviously, James. I mean, I've that's seen them Kenny both.
Yeah.
You got to pick one. Tom Petty or the Eagles.
No, you don't. No.
Then they like, answer.
Okay, so I saw Tom Petty at the Greek years ago. I saw Tom Petty at the Greek, and Stevie Nicks showed up and started singing duets with him. That was crazy. Mm. And then I saw the Eagles at Shoreline years ago. And half the Eagles are gone now, but the Eagles were cool because they played all their individual stuff. So,
James,
same words.
I think James was in part of this conversation, but Gina and Kyle were absolutely perplexed that I didn't know what this song was last Friday at our little upfront thing. They're like, "Oh, they're playing da da da," and I said, what the hell is that? They're like, you don't know this? They play it at every wedding. Like, how do you not know this? I said, nah, I don't know. And then they started singing it. James, were you part of that conversation?
I wasn't, but there was at least 40 consecutive songs that I had no idea what they were.
Well, no, yeah, you, I understand that. Yeah, but
and I have you singing most of them. So
there was one, and they said, there's like, no, they play this at every white wedding. Like, you definitely would know this. Oh. And they were just singing it. And then Complex ended up playing it there during the, you know, the post show. But, yeah, they were like, how do you not know this? And they start singing it. And then when the song.
So wait, the payoff is you don't know what song it is?
I don't know. No, because I thought James was there. I thought James was part of.
I'm going to ask Kyle.
He was like, you don't know this song? I said, no. They start singing it. I've never heard this song. I don't know what it is. They're like, you're what? KC, no way, no way. But yeah, I don't know.
It was not Wet Wedding by Billy Idol. It wasn't. That's David Jackson in the chat. Sorry.
There are some songs that I know that are out of the, you know, the regular genre, but this was not one of them. This was one that I'm off, guys. I don't know this one. I haven't heard it on movies or anything. Although I haven't watched a whole lot of movies either, but
that's true.
You probably haven't watched a lot of movies in which that song might be played in.
Yeah, that wasn't in Menace to Society. I don't
know. No.
John Singleton didn't have that.
It wasn't in The Wood, which I know is one of your all-time favorite. Yeah. They didn't. It didn't.
I'm going to let him play on.
It wasn't in, what is it, Poetic Justice. It wasn't
Poetic Justice
that.
Is good, one. Yeah. There we go.
There you go.
Very good.
Real quick, before we talk about Friday, or tonight, excuse me, in that game, James, we talked about a little bit in passing. Man, sellout crowd at the Golden 1 Center. You were there, And I knew they were going to show up. I didn't necessarily expect a sellout crowd. That was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, 17,889. I was absolutely flabbergasted. It was a complete sellout for a preseason game, which you do not see at all. Even in their heyday, there was always people who complained that you basically had to pay full price for three games that were just preseason that you couldn't even give away sometimes. Mm-hmm. Everyone in Sacramento is excited to see DeMar DeRozan. And then he goes out and puts up 15 points in 15 minutes, doesn't miss a shot, and doesn't even... He only had one assist. He didn't even have a rebound. We haven't even got the full, DeMar DeRozan experience yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, maybe we'll get it tonight at the Chase Center, at the dental office, when the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors play a second time beginning at 7 o'clock tonight. How different, if at all, do you think this game will be? Let me rephrase that, Hammer. How different is the approach for Mike Brown in tonight's game?
Oh, I think it's different. I think he'll play the starters in the first half and into the third quarter. That's something he talked about after the game on Wednesday. I think that's just, kind of the buildup that we're going to see. And then I also think he's probably going to give players, players who might be fighting for a potential rotation spot, I think he might give them a little bit of a look with the starting unit. Like if you're we don't know what's going on with Malik Monk. Malik Monk left the game on Wednesday due to a personal issue. I don't know that he's going to play tonight or not. I haven't actually checked in, which is my bad. There's a possibility he's fine and he'll be there. But he did leave the game due to a personal issue. So if he doesn't play, then, of course, you're going to have to figure that situation out. But I also think that you might see, Isaac Jones playing like maybe 8 minutes with the starters in the first half just to give him a look. Mm. Or Terry Taylor. Well, I think you're going to mix and match a little bit with like who the back end of the rotation type guys are. Mm-hmm. and see what happens.
Yeah. So like, as opposed to almost like a shift change, like it was on Wednesday, they may incorporate, like you just said, some of these guys, like, I don't know but like a Boogie Ellis might be on the court with DeRozan and Sabonis or something like that. You think you might see some of that tonight?
Yeah, and if not tonight, maybe next game, maybe the game after. I think you do want to kind of mix it up. And like, look, if Malik Monk isn't going to play, I think Mason Jones is going to have a bigger role. But I also think that it's possible that Boogie Ellis can come in and give his best Malik Monk impersonation. From what I saw the other night, he has no problem shooting the ball. He doesn't care. And that's bold, but it's also like, hey, man, that's how you get to the league. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't hesitate. You can't be scared of the moment. Go out there and live your best life, every time you get on the court. And so if Monk doesn't play, or, they sit Monk during one of the other games, I could see him playing like a more substantial role just to see what he's got, You want to see how they hold up on the defensive end. You want to see how they are in rotations, all that stuff. I also think that is something that they probably worked on the last 2 days. Their rotations were just a hot mess. And part of that is because you're playing with new people. And, again, I've talked about this, but Isaac Jones, I thought, did a really nice job of trying to play help defense and rotating as like a weak side shot blocker. And then no one was getting to his guy in the corner. And they just kept bombing threes from the corner. And that was normally it wasn't his man. He was man who was shooting it, but it wasn't in the rotation. It should have been somebody else going over and covering for him. And that just didn't happen. And so you gotta figure out these rotations, especially with some of the young players who may or may not play a role once we start the regular season.
You think Mike is looking more on the defensive end than the offensive end when it comes to those types of ideas, those types of rotations of getting, some of those guys who are fighting for a roster spot in, with the big dogs, or looking more at the offensive end?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You can't look like you don't belong at all on the offensive end. And again, like a guy like Isaac Jones, I thought he looked like he totally belonged. Like when he started doing the back to the basket stuff, it was like, oh, look at this. But then we'd keep hearing about him shooting the three ball, and he wasn't efficient from three in the game the other night, but he did find his way to the corner and did take 3-point shots, which is something that you need him to do. He's a little flat, which he talked about, like that's something that he worked on during the during the offseason they wanted to get a little bit more lift on his shots and a little bit more legs. But I think nerves, and I think, you know, your first game, you expend a lot of energy because of crowd and all that stuff. And he probably will be better suited like in game two, game three, game four, as he gets like more acclimated to being in an NBA building. But overall, like what Mike is looking for is like, are you listening? Are you doing, like, if you're not rotating correctly, are you fixing it when we pull you aside and talk to you? Are you hitting the crash zone, which is such a point of emphasis for this team? They're going to go for all kinds of offensive rebounds the whole time. And like, it's going to be that. It's not going to be like, hey, you turned the ball over three times and we can't have that. Like, if they're legitimate turnovers and you turn it over, like, they're not going to get super upset with you. Or like Mason Jones goes out and just like looks like Chris Duarte fouling everybody, you know, like fouling people on the sidelines and stuff, fouls out in like 20 minutes with six fouls. That's something you can't do, but he was the only one, you know, like what did the Warriors shot 13 free throws and that guy had six of like their 12 fouls or something. So you got to tighten some of that stuff up. But those are like little points of emphasis for specific players. The overall picture is crash zone, start learning your rotations, talk on defense, and look like you belong overall. Just don't look like you're in the way, and you can probably earn a lot of points with the coaching staff.
Do you know if Mike Brown was happy with what he saw on Wednesday, or, you know, just kind of complacent? Like, what was his mood after that game and his feeling after watching that performance? You know, probably before the tape. I'm sure you talked to him before he got to watch the tape, but was he okay with what he saw?
Yeah, I mean, I think for Mike, it's really difficult to be highly critical because you scored 68 points in the first half, and that was without Herter and without Lyles in your rotation. So that in itself is like, holy cow, like how much does this team have in it offensively? This team is going to be able to score. And then the second half, like, look, you have expectations a little bit for young players, but not in their first preseason game. It's just kind of like, again, roll the ball out there. You guys try to follow the principles. Maybe the second, you know, that group has to do a little bit more play set than they do flow, just because they don't really even know what a flow offense should look like from the Kings. And so I don't think you can be hypercritical with what happened in the second half either. They held their own, and the Warriors ran Pajemski and Kevon Looney and, you know, a bunch of Kuminga. Those guys were out there, Trayce Jackson-Davis, like their rotational players outside of Steph and Draymond were out there for a huge percentage of the second half. And so it's tough to judge your young guys against, you know, again, seasoned veteran players. And so I think Mike had to be pretty happy coming out of that game, just because if you're only going to play your starters the first half, outside of like, again, the 3-point shooting thing, you know, I think he's probably pretty happy.
Kyle Mattson checking in. What song did you tell KC was played at white weddings? Dancing Queen by ABBA.
ABBA. Okay, yeah, yeah. I remember that now.
Dame, do you know that song?
Yes. Dancing Queen, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Dancing Queen. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
ABBA's like one of the great, you know.
It's a disc. Is that considered wait, what?
Like ABBA?
Yeah.
Like, singing group wise, they're one of the great singing groups of all time.
Really?
Oh yeah, ABBA's incredible.
Is that a disco record? That's a disco record, right?
It's disco era. There is some disco. I mean, if you've seen like Mamma Mia, that's just ABBA. Like every song is Mamma Mia and Mamma Mia 2 or whatever. Like they're all, yeah.
There's a Mamma Mia 2. I knew that. Okay.
Yes, wow. I believe there is. Yeah, and I mean, it's been a Broadway play forever.
Yeah.
ABBA, they stopped like touring together like decades ago, and they're still huge. And then they started to come back, and I think they cut a new album not that long ago. But then their tour was with the Holograms, which is weird.
Oh.
And they were selling out with that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're big, just not in your world. Well, they were big at one point.
Yeah, I don't know. I never heard. What's it? Dancing Girl? What is it called?
Dancing Queen.
Dancing Queen.
I never heard that one. And they were perplexed. They were like, what? So no, I hadn't heard it. I hadn't heard it.
That's funny.
Probably have heard it. Like I like it. It does show like it. It does show up all of like I don't know. That's the one part I can tell you because I feel like it's been on commercials. It's been in like a movie. Like you've probably heard it. You just don't know it.
Well, Complex played it, and I was like, no. It's...
You hadn't even heard the hook before.
Didn't ring a bell. Didn't ring a bell. Maybe I have, but it didn't ring a bell.
I don't know what ABBA is, though. Now I'm trying to look up like ABBA's greatest hits. I'm flustered by this.
They have a lot of greatest hits.
And mind you, I'm in the minority. Huge catalog. I'm in the minority. I'm one of the few that hadn't heard the song.
That's funny.
All right. Well, yeah. All right. Well, we got to the bottom of that mystery.
There it is.
Kyle Madsen. Oh, where were we? How does Mike Brown feel about ABBA? Do we know?
I'm going to guess Mike Brown knows ABBA pretty well. Yeah.
I think he does too.
I think he does. Yeah. And like he grew up in the similar era that I did. So yeah, I'm going to guess he knows exactly who ABBA is.
We won't talk to you before the next Kings game. What do you think Sunday's game looks like? If they're playing kind of into the third quarter, the starters, the main rotation guys tonight, is it the same thing? Is it maybe they get to the fourth quarter on Sunday, or is that the dress rehearsal game, or is it the fourth game of the preseason?
I think fourth game is closer to dress rehearsal, but again, I don't think they'll play guys more than like 28, 29 minutes. As far as Sunday, I would say probably we're going to see players get up to like 22 to 24 minutes. Maybe I'm off there, but I think that's typically. I'll have to go back because I remember thinking we went through this last year and the Kings played the starters more minutes in either game three or game four than what we expected him to do. But I also they only have four games last season. It seems like they only had four. I feel like we have one more preseason game than they have the last couple of years. Maybe I'm off there, but I think the biggest difference is you go up against Portland and you go from like one of the great 3-point shooting teams in the league in Golden State for two games to the worst 3-point shooting team in the league. And I don't think they got any better at shooting the three, but they're long and athletic and, you know, talented, just kind of a mess. It's good to play the Warriors twice and then the Blazers once. So you get an understanding that your 3-point shooting defense might not be nearly as bad as you thought it was. It's just that you played a buzzsaw.
So what you're saying, James, Sunday a must win for the Sacramento Kings.
It is a must win. Yes. No. Just like game one was a must win a couple of years ago when that question was asked.
Yeah. No, there's no arguing it. It is what it is. Must win.
look, if you want to take the Kings seriously this year, they're going to have to win game three of the preseason against the Portland Trailblazers at the Golden One.
Yeah. Preseason doesn't matter at all. It doesn't. I mean, the only thing you're doing is you're trying to find the flow. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to like get the players to connect and find a rhythm on the court together. And, you know, I think the offensive end usually happens well before the defensive end, but it's where you got to work out the kinks on the defensive end too.
I just want to mention this. It's not Kings related, but I think it's kind of important and just makes you throw your hands up. But Matthew Wright, the replacement kicker for the 49ers, suffered a dislocated shoulder, and his availability for next Sunday is in doubt. So they may have to go sign another kicker.
So let's before James chimes in, how did he dislocate his shoulder?
Trying to make a tackle on a kickoff.
He dislocated his shoulder because for the second straight week, the San Francisco 49ers kick defense team was so bad that the kicker had to make not just like a chase a guy down and push him out of bounds. They had to go in and try to hit stick somebody, and he got hurt. And he got hurt the same way that Moody got hurt the week before, because their kick return team is horrible. and their special teams is a disaster. And I hate to say it, like somebody either needs to lose their job or they need to find new players, because they've allowed teams back into, I think it's four games now, because of their special teams. You know, whether it's the punt where the guy ran into the punter, which was the most inexcusable thing ever. That same guy allowed the punt to get blocked in week one, week two, and then they've had kick returns. Like, it's just a hot mess. Oh, and the fumbles from the kick return team. Mm-hmm. They've just been a disaster.
Well, I do owe him an apology, because after his first kick, I said, that looks awful. He looked like he was from the 1970s, the way he was kicking. He was like straight on and then like folded his body when he kicked. I said, oh, no, this is not going to go well. And he ended up being perfect on the night. So he was actually pretty good.
But to be fair to the brother, wasn't he like being evacuated or something? Evacuate?
Yeah, facts.
Oh.
Yeah, he was down in the eye of Hurricane Milton down there, and they're like, hey pal, you want to come be a kicker? And he's like, yeah, I gotta get my family out of here, let's go. And
it was crazy. Yeah,
I feel bad for him, but you know, kickers weigh 155 pounds and they shouldn't be running up and hitting somebody. No. That's, you know, yeah, it's one thing to not touch somebody down like Wisnowski did on when his punt got blocked, that inexcusable again play on special teams, but it's a whole nother thing when these guys are running as like, I mean, they're basically their headhunters on, they should not be running up and trying to make hits on a kick.
Kickers
return,
need to start just running off the field after they kick it, just kick it off and run off the field,
the field, or just push them out of bounds. You don't have to hit them. Like, you're on the sideline. Just push them out of bounds.
When they're in the middle of the field, there's nothing you can do, that's what's happening. They're busting up the middle on the Niners.
Well, that one was on the sideline. He tried
fall down into the fetal position.
Yeah. Well, that's where you're supposed to just get tangled up in their legs and hope that they fall. Yeah.
No.
That's a kicker rule. You just like fall, like, and they like hope that the guy trips over you on the way down. At least not go down and hit stick somebody.
Yeah, just slow him down so the other football players can go. I said other. I didn't say the real. I said the other.
You got kickers and you got football players.
That's right.
Damn shame. Damn shame. Who you got tonight? Dodgers or Padres?
I'm hoping the Padres.
Me too. Okay.
Casey, yeah,
I'm
but
hoping
that's not
the Padres. I think the Dodgers are going to win.
It's a coin flip. I think it's a coin flip. Right. It should be fun either way.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That's the standalone, right? There's no other game tonight because the Yankees moved on. The Guardians are tomorrow.
Yeah. Just a Sacramento Kings game.
That's a moving one. Yeah, got Kings basketball. All right, we've got that baseball game coming up here on ESPN 1320 coming up in about 30 minutes. Make sure you tap into that. Make sure you're following us across all our social media platforms. Hit the thumbs up before you go. And most of all, we won't have one Kings game to talk about on Monday. We'll have two Kings games to talk about on Monday. So make sure you're locked in with us beginning at 10 a.m. here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos Padres.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.